Ich möchte euch alle noch einmal ganz herzlich willkommen heißen. Ich muss euch aber wahrscheinlich sehr ernsthaft bitten, eine ruhige Atmosphäre zu erzeugen, weil mir ist so die Stimme irgendwo noch im Bengalen zwischen den Palmen. Bäume hängen geblieben, die kommen nach einiger Zeit, glaube ich, erst mit mir zurück nach Deutschland. Ich müsste jetzt mal sehen, in welcher Sprache wir kommunizieren. How many of you are there on the internet? We have to decide if we are, if you are in the majority or if we German speakers are in the majority. Ja, kannst du vielleicht sehen, weil unter Umständen bleiben wir in deutscher Sprache, weil sich das so ein bisschen zeitlich verändert hat. Für die das erste Mal hier dabei sind, wir übertragen das normalerweise als eine Art Internet-Broadcast und da sind die Kameras und jetzt muss ich sehen, if there are people switched in and listen to us who speak English and only English. I will have to speak in English, but I would prefer to speak in German language.
Gerade 30 Leute schauen, wo wir nicht wissen, was ich sprechen
soll. Ja, ja.
Cool, machst du schon sehr verbreitet, dass es heute Abend im Programm geht und das ist auf meiner TV gezeigt.
Das ist in Englisch. Okay. All right, all of you who are in the internet, Harry Bohl, we will speak in English. I was at first not sure if I would speak in English because I have something important to say, and the German devotees are best addressed in the German language, of course. But I think those who are interested to hear what I have to say will make a special endeavor to also hear and translate for themselves from English into the language they are used to think in. Good. So nice to be back in. Actually, it's not nice to be back in the West. It is miserable. The weather is much colder, but the hearts are much more unspiritual, which is something which one notices. But it's nice to be here in the community of all of you who have a connection to Krishna consciousness and to address all of our listeners in the internet. We're sorry that we are a little late, but everything had to fall into place as we were going into this program. So, Hare Krishna, I will immediately start with my lecture. It is an Adivas ceremony, and what we want to attain here is we want to prepare ourselves for tomorrow's big event, which is Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Narahari Das Thakur, a great Vaishnava who has written a very important book about the times after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has written this song which we've just sang, where he posed a question. A question which I would like to also pose to all of you. This is what he is asking himself. If Sriman Gauranga Mahaprabhu had not appeared, then what would have become of us? Just think about this in your life. If you would have not made a contact with Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Varaha Prabhu might have become a doctor, maybe, because your father is a doctor, I understand.
At best.
Or some of you would still take drugs. Others would not have married the partner they have married, Kadata would maybe be the German chess master, if possible, if Gauranga Mahaprabhu, or you would have studied your, you would continue your physics studies and most probably completed it at the university. If Gauranga Mahaprabhu had not appeared, Premamayi Radhe would maybe by now be a successful fashion designer in Prague, as an example. No, more a teacher, maybe. You studied for a teacher. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not have appeared. What would you have done, Kunya Bihari? I mean, in a, not in a critical way, just in a, we would have had a different life, for sure. This is how I mean my question. It would be different. Ananda Vadan, you would maybe not have met, if Gauranga Mahaprabhu would have not appeared, your wife Kanupriya, you would have maybe married a person who was interested in music, in techno music. No, why are you laughing? It is, no, I think you don't understand what I'm saying. Our life has changed with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. It's not about the examples that we say something funny. I want to just bring to your attention, our life would be different. No? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. So this is the question which Narahari asked. We have something to do with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because our life has been changed by him significantly. Narahari Das Thakur now asks a few questions and see if you can also feel like this. See how, by these questions you can understand what is your present connection with Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He says, how could we have tolerated living if he would not have appeared? Some feel Gauranga Mahaprabhu's appearance has maybe totally brought turmoil into their lives and they have not found the ideal way. But Narahari asked, how could we have tolerated living? In this universe, who would have ever come to know the glories of Srimati Radharani and the topmost limit of Premarasa? I want to ask you, do you know something about the glories of Srimati Radharani? Do you know something about the topmost limit of Premarasa? Do you even think in such categories? If you don't think in such categories, maybe you have not fully understood what Mahaprabhu has come to teach, what he's all about. Maybe you just think he is someone who has made a movement in which you are trying to find a certain relationship. Either you like it or you are neutral or you don't like it. What I want to express is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has changed our life in some ways. Have we brought our life in harmony with Gauranga Mahaprabhu? This is the question. If Mahaprabhu had not come, who could have had the intelligence to join the sweet Madhura Rasa of Sri Radha Krishna's Leelas in Vrindavan? If Mahaprabhu had not come, who else could have given the power to enter the Braja Gopi's loving mood of Seva to Yugal Kishore? So we hear in this poem that Mahaprabhu brought something very special to the world, and it's listed. Now he gets very simple and practical. With a simple heart, sing over and over again of Sri Gauranga's glorious qualities. No one has ever seen such a compassionate person as he in the entire ocean of material existence. But there's a problem which I have. Narahari says, I think it's a problem which all of us have. Even though I know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu something, and I chant Gauranga's names, his qualities, and I listen to his pastimes, somehow my heart has not changed. Somehow my heart has not melted. Oh no! How do I continue to tolerate my useless life and the burden of this body? How is it that the Creator seems to have created the body of Narahari, but instead of placing a heart there, he has given me a stone which doesn't change even when I hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? This is the song. I think it is a very, very interesting song because it puts a question to us. Gauranga Mahaprabhu's appearance has changed my life. We are now different than we would have been without his appearance. But it also puts the question, have I taken the full advantage of his appearance, and do I even understand why he has appeared and what he has come to bring? It is my strong feeling that most of us Western converts to the Hare Krishna movement have not joined the movement and not understood it, but we have only taken partial aspects of the movement. Maybe we were football hooligans, now we are kirtan hooligans, but we have remained hooligans or Westerners. We have not changed our hearts. And that is the whole idea of Mahaprabhu's appearance, to change the heart. In this song, you see many times the word bhava, bhavera bhakati, it says, bhava sagare. What it means is a certain disposition of the heart, also eine ganz gewisse innere Herzensneigung. This is a phonemic German word. Let us say it in a more contemporary way. It's a certain inclination, or modern man would say a certain feeling, a spiritual feeling which comes. See, in spiritual life, there are two ways in which you can live your spiritual life. One is by feeling the nectar and ecstasy of the spiritual life, and the other is by living a spiritual life or a semi-spiritual life where you don't feel the bhava, where you act out of three motivations which do not help you to reach the ultimate goal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there are four motivations in which people practice their spiritual life. One is out of fear. If I don't do this, I go to hell. I think we all know this from the Christian preaching. If I don't do all these things, then I will really have to confront misery and suffering in my life. That's the motivation which you find in all religions, and you find it also amongst those who follow the path of Krishna consciousness. The next motivation which is there, which you will find in spiritual movements and in religions, is asha, a certain hope. If I follow this, I will go to heavens. I will go to paradise. If I follow this path, I will give up my suffering, and I will finally, at long last, be able to enjoy. These things, fear of suffering, or the hope of increased enjoyment, are mostly the main motivations why people take to a spiritual path and continue. There's another motivation which I see very much in our movement. It's called in Sanskrit Kartavya Bhuti. You do it out of duty, really. You have given initiation promises to chant a certain number of rounds, and now out of duty you take the bhivak and you chant at least some rounds. No, cut. I have this duty. I gave this vows. I really must do it. But all the three motivations will not help you to experience real spiritual life. There's only one motivation which will help you. That is called raga, or taste. You must practice bhakti out of a deep, abiding taste. If this taste is not with you, you must do everything in your possession to obtain it. How long, I'm asking you, can you continue on a spiritual path without taste? If you do what you do without taste, you will, after some time, develop personality disorders. You will always have to force yourself to do it. You will have to suppress all that what you really like to do, for which you really have taste. Everything which you do and will, you will just hope the lecture is quickly over. You will just hope that the kirtan is quickly over. You will just hope that soon you don't have to be in that spiritual meeting any longer, but you can do what you really like to do. And Gadadhar can tell you, he has done some initial studies into psychology. If you suppress what you really have taste for, after some time, what you suppress will come out in a way which is not healthy. So you must see that you somehow or other find and develop a taste. And my dear devotees, for me, Gauranga Mahaprabhu's appearance is all about that. He has come to give the bhava, to give the bhakti bhava, or the feeling which is necessary in order to practice bhakti with nectar. He has come to save us in the Kali Yuga from dysfunctional forms of spirituality. And I would like to talk today about this. It is said, when there is taste in the heart, one loses all one's problems which one has, all the weaknesses. All this is simply no longer relevant. You like so much what you do that you blossom into what you do. Also du liebst so sehr das, was du tust, wenn du einen Geschmack hast, dass du zu einer Art am Blühen kommst. Du wächst zu dem, was du werden kannst. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur speaks about this importance of raga or taste in spiritual life with a very interesting example. It's an example which you will which you can also, I mean, this is the way the Sufis talk. He says, when someone has taste, he loses all his obstacles in spiritual life, all his weaknesses and all his problems, like a drunken man who is fully intoxicated and loses first his head, then his scarf, and then his coat. If someone has taste, he will quickly lose his sense of rivalry. Rivalry, big problem. I want to be better than someone else. He loses his ignorance when he has taste about his spiritual position. And he also loses his hatred of other people or his aversion. I remember I lived on an island. I grew up there. And we had on our island a rich man who would on occasion get drunken. His name was Fritz Monarch at that time. Fritz the King, it translates. And I remember when this man had drunken wine and alcohol, he would just go to the park and he would lose his head and other things, and we children would always go up to him and say, Fritz Monarch, we are your subjects, Untertanen, please give us 100 German marks. And Fritz Monarch would do it because he was not conscious of money and of dresses and of anything. Sometimes we would find him not dressed properly because he would lose everything. So this is this example, which in the world is considered to be a negative example, is given in order to show us that if we have taste in spiritual life, we lose the things which are not important, our anattas, and we become freed and happy and deep personalities, really. Now, I've just come from Mayapur, as some of you know, and I had the chance to deeply connect with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by serving him in his mission of spreading the holy names to one and all, and thinking about him deeply, and so on. And I must say, as I was in Mayapur and I heard so much about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I saw the places which were associated with his pastimes, and I had the opportunity to really, investigate deeper what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could mean in my life, I became very blissful and relieved. I found out you just need to sing his holy name, Gauranga, and have faith in his pastimes, and you're experiencing by his mercy very quickly a deep taste in Krishna consciousness. There's one pastime which I would like to tell to you. I've brought my little orchestra here with me. It was at the house of Srivast Thakur where the Lord performed daily his sankirtan. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not do kirtan just for 2 hours or 6 hours. His kirtan lasted from the dawn, Abenddämmerung, up to, this is called dusk, the Abenddämmerung, up to dawn, the Morgendämmerung. sometimes it was long, you know, in winter time. And sometimes they wouldn't stop even then, but for instance, on Ekadasi, they would do 24-hour kirtans. And sometimes the other kirtans carried on for even a longer time. So at one of these occasions, the devotees became greatly fatigued. They sat down to just rest their tired and sweaty bodies a little bit. Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the only one, because he still has a spiritual body, still dancing in ecstasy and calling out the names of Krishna and going through all the Sattvika Bhavas, they're called, the eight transformations of ecstasy. It's not just one, it's eight, then it divides in more and more and more ecstasies. And he was the only one, so he looked at the devotees and he said, what would help you to continue to dance? The devotee said, like you look when the lecture is too long, you know. Then Mahaprabhu asked, what would you like to eat? The devotee said, fresh mangoes. But it was not the mango season. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, could someone please go and find a mango seed? And that is, that you find all over Bengal, you know, people eat mangoes and then they just leave the seeds somewhere because they are biocomposable. And someone brought a mango seed, and Lord Chaitanya took that seed. And before the eyes of all, he placed the seed into the earth. And soon it sprouted like this, and it grew and grew and grew until a big tree was there which had wonderful mangoes who were red and yellow and very ripe they were. And they had no skin, these mangoes, and no seeds. They were just juice and somehow suspended in the air. So Lord Chaitanya took such a mango, he washed it, and there must have been a little skin, otherwise how? He washed it, he ate some of it, and then he first offered it to Krishna, the text says, and then he ate it, and then he distributed the mangoes right from the tree to his devotees. One mango was sufficient to fill the needs of everyone because it seemed to have been a spiritual mango. The text says it had no skin and no seed. Was very an inconceivable mango, and one was sufficient to feed everyone and energize everyone. So then they all got up and they said, now we are ready to continue with the kirtan. Please lead us in the kirtan. This happened for 365 years. Not years, days. Each day they would dance and each day they would feast on this mango festival and relieve themselves of their fatigue and weakness. Then after some time, I cannot tell you exactly how long this tree was there. It says here, for 1 year this pastime went on, this tree disappeared. It did not stay on any longer. So I read this pastime while I was in Mayapur, And I visited a place where there are now many mango trees, a place which reminds us of this pastime. It is at this place where the Padayatras and the Parigram parties, or the parties of the pilgrims, regularly stop and then eat mangoes, but only if mangoes are in the season. There are no longer these mango miracles which happened during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, where one tree developed fruits without the seasons and in such quantities that for all the days of the years it would feed the hungry Vaishnavas, who were even more hungry than you are because they were more healthy. So now I read this pastime. It was very inspiring to me. And then I thought in this mango garden about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why did he do this? He did this to give his devotees a taste. He nourished his devotees with this so that they could go on in their spiritual life. The Chaitanya Charitamrita speaks about this point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives a taste and nourishes his devotees. The Chaitanya Charitamrita speaks about a desire tree which Lord Chaitanya brought on this earth, a desire tree which had fruits which would nourish with a deep taste all the living entities. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thought one day, my name is Vishvambar, one who maintains the entire universe. You know, God maintains all of us. He gives us the air to breathe and the sabjis which we take, the vegetables which we take. He gives us all what we need in our lives. So Lord Chaitanya thought, my name is Vishvambar, one who maintains the entire universe. But the full meaning of this name Vishvambar, Vishva means universe, and Ambara, he who maintains, will be realized only if I can fill the whole universe with ecstatic love of God. This is the taste about which we are speaking, the ecstatic love of God. Some of us have experience with substances like good sweets, etc., which help us to go through our days. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu maintained a life without ecstatic love is useless. It cannot help us really to move forward in our spiritual life. And therefore, he started a movement where love of Godhead, or the taste of this ecstatic love of Godhead, is given. He wanted the living entities, or the people of this world, to progress in love of God and experience ultimately the highest ecstasies. In the analogy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and here you will need to concentrate a little, is three things. He himself is the tree who gives the fruit. He himself is the gardener who nourishes the fruit, the tree, by Shravan and Kirtan. And he himself is the distributor of the tree of love of Godhead. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the cause of this love. That's what it, what the author wants to say by saying he himself is the tree. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also the distributor of this love, and he is also taking care that this love tree, if you so want, which gives love fruit, is maintained. The effect of someone who tastes this fruit of love is expressed in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Adi Lila chapter 9, and I would like to read it to you. It is the fruit of love of Godhead distributed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is such a great intoxicant that anyone who eats it, filling his belly, immediately becomes maddened by it, and automatically he chants, he dances, he laughs, and he enjoys. So when you take an intoxication, then you have a substance which overwhelms your normal consciousness. This is here, this is an analogy for what happens if you taste the gift of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This gift will overwhelm you, and it will make you very happy, so much that you sing, you dance, you laugh, and you enjoy. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great gardener, sees that people are chanting, dancing, and laughing, and that some of them are rolling on the floor, that's authorized, and some are making loud humming sounds, he smiles with great pleasure. Lord Chaitanya is happy if someone gets intoxicated with love of Godhead. Then it says, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also personally eats this fruit, and as a result he constantly remains mad, as if helpless and bewildered. With his Sankirtan movement, that's the movement he started, the Lord made everyone mad like himself. We do not find anyone who was not intoxicated by his Sankirtan movements. And even persons who had formerly criticized Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by calling him a drunkard, also ate the fruit and began to dance, saying, "Very good, very good, bhala, bhala." So this is a little bit from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It means that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to distribute taste, an overwhelming taste as such. Are you tasting it already? This is an important question which we have to ask ourselves. Yes, Mahaprabhu has changed our life. Yes, we are now not called Herman, but Haridas, and so on and so forth. But have we developed the taste of Krishna consciousness? And if not, how can we get it? Huh? This is the question. But I would like to first of all highlight this, because I fear if this is not known, we mistake the movement for Krishna consciousness and become another one of all these religious institutions who cannot give their followers a real taste in spiritual life. I fear if we don't understand what this taste is all about and how we can get it, we become maybe only external people who are neither good materialists nor good spiritualists, but totally entwurzelt, uprooted people, and so on. At best, Indian freaks, and so on. So I therefore feel it is very important for us to understand Mahaprabhu's movement and what it is. And if you will continue to listen, you might find out that it's something totally different than you think at the present moment. You will find out maybe it's totally different from what ISKCON is at the present moment presenting to us, or what we understand ISKCON's message to be. Therefore, I feel it is important to hear it. You must know that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received this fruit, this type of special love, from his guru Ishvara Puri, who was an ecstatic mendicant. You must also know that Ishvara Puri belongs to a group of Vaishnavas who totally broke with the tradition of their times. It's a total revolutionary movement. There is this group of Vaishnavas, starting with Madhavendra Puri, the guru of Gauranga's guru, who said goodbye to the formalities of Vedic rules and regulations. And they formed a group of transcendentalists who was absorbed in something totally different than what was practiced at the time. It was this ecstatic love of God. And I would like to read to you a very famous prayer of Madhavendra Puri, where he says how he absolutely diverts from the then practiced spirituality. It's something like Der Schlachtruf von Eugen Drewermann to the Catholic Church, or it's something which maybe the Sufis did when they took to another form of Islam. It is something which maybe Martin Luther did when he said no to the practiced religion of his time and started something totally new, which brought him the Reichsächtung. That's the biggest curse you can get at that time. Dieser Mann hat kein Recht auf sein Leben, auf sein Eigentum. Wenn jemand ihn angreift, wird der deutsche Staat ihn nicht beschützen. This was the Reichsacht. He totally broke with the tradition, but he felt he had to follow his consciousness. This is what happened to this group of Vaishnavas who started with Madhavendra Puri, then Ishvara Puri, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were very unangenehm. They were very unpleasant to the formalistic society and all its rules. You will hear now Madhavendra Puri's prayer. Santyavannanavatramastu bhavato bhostanatupyam namo bodeva pitarashatarpanovido nahangshamaksham yatam yatra kvapinishatyayarava kulatamatasya kangsadvisha smaram smaramagam haramitatalam manyekim anyename. Oh, you evening prayer which all of us Hindu praise, all good unto you, goodbye. O my morning bath, I bid you goodbye. O demigods and forefathers. You know, this is demigod worship and the worship of the ancestors, like it is done in Japan and the Shinto religions. Please excuse me. I'm unable to perform any more offerings for your pleasure. I can't do this any longer. I have now decided to free myself from all reactions to sins simply by remembering anywhere and everywhere the great descendant of Yadu and the great enemy of Kamsa. Do you have any idea who that might be? You're silent?
Krishna.
Krishna. Wonderful. I'm no longer following all these rules and all these regulations. All what I do now is I remember Krishna. I think that is sufficient for me. What is the use of further endeavors? Here speaks someone who has fallen in love with Krishna. Of course, Madhavendra Puri had to confront criticism, but he answered the criticism. He said, let the sharp moralist accuse me of being illusioned. I do not mind. Experts in the Vedic activities may slander me and say, you're totally misled. Friends and relatives may call me frustrated. You didn't find happiness in our Vedic religion. You are so frustrated. My brothers may call me a fool. The wealthy people who run after money may point me out as mad. And the learned philosophers may assert that I'm much too proud. Or you know everything. You think you're better than all of us. They may say like this. Still, in my heart, I do not move an inch from the determination to serve the lotus feet of Govinda, though I be unable to do it. What drives these spiritualists? What type of love is in them? How do they think? How can they do such a thing? To say goodbye to conventional religion. They have a certain mood which Gauranga came to preach. The mood was, I need God more than anything. I need God more than all my plans. I cannot become satisfied without God. Rupa Goswami spoke about this mood of I don't want material things, what the world has to offer me through the performance of religious principles and so on. I want just you, Krishna. I don't want your gifts. He has said, only 15 more minutes and it's over. O Lord of the poor, do what you like with me. Give me either mercy or punishment. But in this world I have none to look to except your lordship. And then Rupa Goswami gives this beautiful example, which I think you know, of the Chataka bird. It's like a spatz who flies and ignores all the water which is there on the world just to drink fresh rain water. He just likes to drink directly from the cloud. It's of course an analogy. It says he doesn't want things of the world. He wants Krishna. It is said that this type of exclusive love of God started with Madhavendra Puri. He taught it to his disciple Ishwara Puri, And to a second, to his other famous disciple, do you know the other famous disciple of Manavendra Puri? Lakshmipati Tirtha, some say, yes. Advaita Acharya. There was one other disciple. So these devotees at that time would move unrecognized. They would hide themselves. It's a little bit like in our medieval time, the true alchemists who could transform, who can really produce, it's called the red lion, der rote Löwe. They would, because everyone was crazy after, I don't want to go into the detail and into after gold, you know, they were after the elixir of life, but they could also produce gold from ordinary metal, and the kings and the barons were crazy after this formula. But in order to protect themselves, they would have to move in disguise because they didn't want to produce gold for these money-hungry kings and aristocracy. And they were interested in transformation of the character. So these they had to move in disguise, like all the cultured people of medieval times who started some new thought had to disguise themselves, otherwise they would burn on the fires of Inquisition and all. Do you know that Dante, who we all celebrate now as a big author, had to hide for a long time? The real masters had to hide. So these Vaishnavas were moving in disguise, but sometimes they couldn't keep their disguise. What they did is, Ishvara Puri had heard about Advaita Acharya. He knew that Advaita Acharya was a disciple of his own spiritual master, but Advaita Acharya didn't know Ishvara Puri. So Ishvara Puri came to Advaita Acharya to see him, but Advaita Acharya was engaged in doing puja, so Ishvara Puri just sat next to him. And after the puja, Advaita Acharya looked at him and said, "You look like a Ekadanda Mayavadi sannyasi, but there's something about you which makes me understand that you are one of those." Is it sometimes when you meet someone who's very interesting to you, you want to find out, what is your secret? What have you understood in your life? Please tell me. I'm very interested in this. So Ishvara Puri decided to keep his disguise, and he said, "I'm lower than a sutra. I came here just to see your lotus feet." So while this discussion was going on, "There's something about you," said Advaita Acharya. Mukunda Datta, who was a very, very, very wonderful singer, and he was a true bhavuka. He knew the feelings of love himself, he felt. He started to sing a song about Krishna. And he sang so beautifully that people would cry when he sang. I don't know, nowadays we have singers who can sing so beautiful that people are very moved. I think there must be modern entertainers. You feel something when they sing. So Mukunda sang, and when he sang, you felt some great love, because he was full of love himself. And when Ishvara Puri heard the song of Mukunda, understood also who about Ishvara Puri. Well, er wollte ihn auffliegen lassen. In your ordinary German language, you would say like this, no? Er wollte ihn aufdecken und sein Geheimnis enthüllen. He wanted to show who Ishvara Puri was. So he sang about Krishna and his pastimes. And as soon as Ishvara Puri heard this, he started to fight inside. But he felt this uncontrollable ecstasy taking possession of him. Remember we said this fruit of love is like an intoxication. I think when you take an intoxication, at the beginning you might like to keep your neutral stand just to see how long, and then from it comes over you and everything happens. I'm not so experienced, but I've heard from the scientists that this happens, you know. There's your ordinary consciousness there, and then something comes with a new introduction of alcohol or whatever the person who's after intoxication takes, you know. It overwhelms his awareness and breaks the border to the unconscious and does certain things. So in this case, the song of Mukunda was working on Ishvara Puri. He tried to keep his stance. He wanted to remain in disguise, but an uncontrollable ecstasy came over him because he's initiated by Madhavendra Puri, the one who brought this extraordinary love about which we have heard. So then ecstatic symptoms of love of God came, tears came over him, he fell to the ground. Advaita Acharya, so I knew it. He is one of those. And he took him on his lap to try to calm him. But by now Ishvara Puri was crying so much, these tears of love, it's not extra, it's extraordinary, that he drenched the body of Advaita Acharya in these tears. Er hat die ganze Kar durchnässt mit seinen Tränen. All devotees immediately remembered Krishna when they saw Ishvara Puri. And they concluded, only by contact with Madhavendra Puri can he exhibit such symptoms. And they must have remembered how Madhavendra Puri, that great saint, on his deathbed sang a song. He died singing, "Oh, where are you, Krishna?" He expressed his separation from Krishna, and he went right to Krishna. So, I don't know if I can reach you spiritually, but see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expressed, he is in this line. In fact, he was the one who gave this love of Godhead to Madhavendra Puri in order to teach that he has brought something which comes into a sampradaya. He expressed this mood of love of Godhead in his Shikshastakam prayers. I've written down 5, 6, 7, but I promised to go a little fast, so I don't think I should. Yes, he says, Mahaprabhu has only written for sure 8 verses. And in one of the verses he said, "O son of Nanda, O Krishna, listen to me as I express my heart to you. I'm your eternal servant, but I've fallen into the violent ocean of material existence. Mercifully take me up and place me as a particle of dust at your lotus feet." And then he prays. He says, "When will a stream of tears flow from my eyes? When will my voice choke up? When will the hairs of my body stand on end as I chant your holy names? He prays like this. So you might ask yourself, good, another very impractical lesson. You spoke of an ideal which we can never reach. Is this true? Can we not reach this ideal? Do you think Mahaprabhu, who has changed the course of your life, did this to send you into some desert? Do you think he had an unpractical idea to make you devotees without a taste? Do you think he wanted you to become compromised? Do you think the Lord has a very unpractical suggestion? The Lord who changed your life already? Did he maybe have a plan? Does he maybe have a process? We have to ask ourselves these questions. We have to ask the question, how, if he did give a process, how will this work to me? Can it work for me? And we have to find our relationship to this. I want to tell you something which is a miracle. You have heard in the Facebook the miracle of tears. You can argue if this is a miracle, but there was something which happened which I consider a true miracle. The mother of Vanamali Krishna, who is known to some of us, her name is Manu Rupa, left her body during the Kirtan Mela. She was a devotee like you and me. Only maybe she was a little bit more focused. At least I could see that she was at the yoga expos with all these, I can only say, German yogis, you know, with their German ideas of yoga. And she was very fixed on giving them Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Now, at the time of the Kirtan Mela, the Kirtan Mela, when it started in the Adivas night, a big rainstorm happened. It was the first rain after a few months, and it came with a storm. It was really intense. And Manu Rupa had told her husband a day before, I will soon go. And her husband had asked her, do you feel pain? Because she had a very bad lung infection. And she said, no, somehow I'm blessed to make myself very small and go to the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, where I stay under a flower. This is how people who die speak. It's ordinary. They speak in words which we, in experiences which we don't have. If you go to the dying and help them, and you will all of a sudden hear that they speak different languages and different pictures. They begin to leave the world, and from a distance, the world looks different than it looks to you and me. So the husband thought, yes, this is how dying people speak. But then, all of a sudden, the next day, a devotee came to him and said, I dreamt of your wife. I never knew your wife, but what I saw was that she became very small, almost, if she did change her form, it was the same Manu Rupa, but she went to the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and stayed under a flower there. I saw that in my dream. Now, mind you, this devotee didn't followed all the four regulative principles of spiritual life, which we also follow, and there was no influence of something external on him. Can you please tell me? I never dream of. I don't know your wife. Can you tell me what this means? And the husband didn't tell him what it means. But for him it was clear that his wife had found shelter at Nityananda's lotus feet. She was a worshipper of Lord Nityananda. For him this was a clear indication. Now, after that storm, that Manurupa became absolutely clear in her consciousness, and smilingly left the world and said, "I'm going to my Lord." I consider this something extraordinary. I consider this a successful spiritual life. I consider this something which a practical demonstration that the process, that it can work. Now I want to tell you of something much more practical. During the Kirtan Mela, I thought to myself, I have been asked to host this Mela, to be like the master of ceremonies who holds this all together, and to give spiritual messages during the Kirtan Mela. It was a great honor because so many devotees chanted in Mayapur and all over the world. And also the Kirtan Mela was there in the cable TV. Do you know what that is, cable TV? It was all over Bengal. They buy the cable TV stations bought rights to broadcasting the Kirtan Mela. It was everywhere. Devotees told me they went shopping for coconuts, and then in the coconut stalls they saw the Kirtan Mela. So it was a great honor, and I thought, well, I'm explaining in between that Kirtan really works. Let me tell everyone they should stay a minimum of 8 hours. Some will follow. Most of them will not follow this recommendation because they will go to their favorite Kirtan Niyas and then do maybe 2, 4 hours, 3 hours chanting. But I said, let me make an attempt. I stay 8 hours because I can only say something to others, which I do myself. And I encourage everyone to stay 8 hours. And we chanted in Sridhar Mayapur before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And 8 hours is not, if you are not used to sit so long, if you are only used to slave like a robot for 8 hours and in your work, and then you go relax, then 8 hours kirtan is difficult. It's also difficult for me to sit. I'm so old and so interested to meet so many devotees and so on. But we did it, many did it, and we really felt something extraordinary. It was, many came and said, we've never felt this. What did we feel? And I said, well, let us, why don't you read the 9th chapter of Adi Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita? There we hear of a fruit, a divine fruit, which makes you forget the world and which influences you to such a degree that you become so happy that you laugh, that you sing, that you dance, and that all your problems slip away from you. They go away, just like in our example of the man who has tasted this taste. of the vine, you know, who doesn't even notice how his head and his scarf and his everything goes away. I want to admit to you, it is something to enter Mahaprabhu's religion is something where you must have some faith, I guess. That is important. Otherwise you wouldn't do such a thing. But even if you have no faith, if just on let me try this, if this works or not, you know, let me challenge these Hare Krishna devotees, you know, I'm supposed to be one of them, but only in name. I'm not convinced like they are. Let me challenge them. Let me prove that it doesn't work. Then I can sleep peacefully at least. Go there to Mayapur, sit before the Gauranga Mahaprabhu, do 8 hours, and you will also feel something, because it says even those who have no faith get the fruit of love of God. That's what the text says. He distributed it even to those who were not qualified, like I consider myself not qualified, and I have good reasons to consider myself not qualified. So I just invite you to think deeply about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Tomorrow, most of you will celebrate his appearance day. You will eat Gopunim Prasadam, and you will talk with other devotees about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You will look briefly into the kirtan or stay for longer time according to how you celebrate such festivals. I want to put this question to you. What have you already taken everything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu which he has come to give you? Or have you just taken the fact that he changed your life in some ways? I request you to think deeply about it, because this is something. Here's a text which says Mahaprabhu is presenting this fruit of love of God to the world. He asks all his devotees to distribute this fruit. Now let's check it out, I would say. He does this mostly through the chanting of the holy name. Not only through the chanting of the holy name. That's his process. Let's check it out. Let's take his word and see what is his stuff, Lachman, you know. What is it made of? What is it? Is it really? Does it have substance? And I think if you do this, you will find his gift strikingly wonderful. Make some experiment. You are young people. You are daring, bold, adventurous. You like to climb mountains, no? Let's be real. We are. Let's go into this adventure, and it's wonderful. Hare Krishna. What strikes me so much, my dear devotees, is really these prayers of Madhavendra Puri. And what strikes me so much is also from like something like an order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, I am just one person, how will I reach everyone? Therefore I order every man within the universe to accept this Krishna consciousness movement and distribute it everywhere. Adi Lila 9, text 36. I'm moved by this. Also, something which I found out while staying in Mayapur is just this: Mahaprabhu really wanted all living entities to be benefited. He wanted us as devotees to do something for the welfare of others. Please ask yourself, in what way does my life help others? I know that that's very nice that those of you who are working for Time Waver, they are find a way to really help people even become free of cancer, I understand. No? It is something where we help others. We should have this motivation in order to join the Time Waver crew, to help others with our work. This is necessary if we want to do something properly. We must have this beneficial work for others. No? Lord Chaitanya quoted from that about being there for the welfare of others. He said, just see how these trees are maintaining the living entities with their fruits, with their shade, with their wood. The birth of these trees is successful. Their behavior is just like that of great personalities. For anyone who asked anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. Lord Chaitanya says it's the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence and words. So these are the two things of Mahaprabhu. First, he wanted us to taste his fruit. Take this fruit, taste it yourself, become Krishna conscious yourself, huh? And then do something for the benefit of others. Distribute it for the welfare of others. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wonderful mission. And we might have to rediscover the mission. I'm personally thinking at this moment of my life, if what is the best way in which I can use my little energy in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission of benefiting others? No? How can this be done? So I want to end now this program of Krishna consciousness. I hope there was something in it for you. I'm sorry, it's already 10 minutes before 9. Should we maybe end this by singing just 3 more minutes? Geta? Yeah? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki Gauranga! Gauranga! Das lernt man auch in Mayapur. Und ich bin wieder angerufen. Wo sind denn die Karten? Soll ich mal so eine subtile Melodie singen? Mega subtile Melodie. Die wärst du erstmal, die ist ein bisschen subtil. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Thank you.
Things. One is for the devotees who are online, thank you very much for being with us. I feel I need to, for some of you who may be new devotees, make a small little announcement. When I read of Madhavendra Puri, how he gave up the rules and regulations of formalistic Vedic life, I meant, this means that he gave away these Sandhya prayers, for instance, that every morning, what is it, noontime and afternoon and dusk time, there's certain rituals which you do. This doesn't mean that he gave up what in ISKCON is known as the four rules and regulations. I have to say that because sometimes new devotees look at the broadcast who have not studied, who had not the opportunity to study the philosophy very much in detail. The other thing is, I want to wish all of you a wonderful Gopunim festival. Tomorrow it starts. I would like to recommend to you to reduce a little bit the material parts of our life. Even eating is not so good. We at that time, it's good to fast until the time when Mahaprabhu appeared, or if for some reasons it's difficult for you, then to take just very light things like Ekadasi food or fruits and so on. The idea is to reduce in a way which is practical, which helps you for your spiritual life. Gopunim is best spent really by celebrating amongst the devotees, and for that we have a nice celebration in Berlin. I want to invite those who live in the vicinity to come, and all of you. There's a nice program, and I thank you very much for listening to this presentation, and wish you all the best in your Gopunim and in your relationship with Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Let us all take the gift which he has brought and to take it into our lives. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.